All right, well, we've got
one more sleep, Kevin Barker, and the regular season gets underway.
John Schneider will do a media availability around 3 o'clock today, as will Ross Atkins at 3:30. That's the first media availability of the spring for our man, Ross, since he did that group hug at in Tampa. So maybe we'll get a clearer idea as to the composition of the Blue Jays roster. There still appear to be some questions as to the final spot on the roster. And, of course, officially the ILs kick in tomorrow, et cetera, and the Jays open their regular season against the Tampa Bay Rays tomorrow at the lovely and scenic Tropicana Field. So as we await John Schneider, Kevin, I know we talked a little bit yesterday, and we are going to do our predictions and do some over and unders later on in the show. I know we talked a little bit yesterday about free agency and about Jordan Montgomery still being out there. Jordan Montgomery is now signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, okay, we've talked about how the Jays probably didn't do as much in the offseason as we wanted. I look at the Yankees, obviously getting Juan Soto. Big. Huge. Baltimore, Corbin Burns, they addressed their issues. Got them their opening day starter, but they're still, even the Orioles, they're still a little thin in terms of starting pitchers. Tampa Bay kind of did what Tampa Bay does, and Boston doesn't appear to have any pitching. I want to ask you this. Yes, the Jays did not do a lot this offseason. Do you think that the balance of power or the outlook in the AL East changed dramatically at all? I think we both thought the Orioles were going to be the favorite, the Orioles or the Yankees.
Not for me.
Do you think the balance has changed at all in terms of what we may have anticipated now that Montgomery's off? Because a lot of people thought Boston was slow playing it to get Jordan Montgomery. That clearly wasn't the case.
Yeah, I have no idea what Boston's doing. Do you? I don't think. The Red Sox now.
I actually think they, you know, they've taken care of their minor league system. They're going to evaluate guys at the major league level. I actually like what Boston is doing, not for this year. They're punted on this year. I mean, I can't put it any other way. They have punted on this year. But given where Baltimore is, given where the Yankees are, if I'm the Red Sox, I'm looking at the division, I'm thinking, okay, Baltimore's going to be good for the next decade. Probably. The Yankees, the Yankees haven't won a World Series in a long time. They spent a lot of money during that time. They've had some of the best players in baseball during that time. The Rays, I still think the Rays take a step back, and I'm sure if you're the Red Sox, you're looking at the Blue Jays and going, in 2 years, this team could be not very good. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. They're basically losing everybody in 2 years. So I get, unlike a lot of people, I completely get what the Red Sox are doing.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you're a fan of the Red Sox, you have no idea. I mean, they're so used to winning there in New England that what they've done the last couple of years, I mean, they've been atrocious, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. Maybe it is. Maybe they have a plan. Maybe the plan will work out sooner than later. Look, you sort of, with the American League East, if Gerrit Cole was healthy, you would think, at least for me, I would think they are the front runner to win the American League East to make a serious run. That's me.
Yeah.
You could argue the Orioles. The Orioles are going to take a step back. Like the sophomore thing is a thing, right? Expectations is a big deal when you haven't been through them. Now, again, they're very talented, and they got, you know, talent coming. More talent to help out even more. I think you got right now, you got the Orioles at the top, and then you would have the Yankees, the Jays, and the Rays in the middle. If you said the Rays were going to finish second, the Blue Jays would finish fourth, the Yankees would finish third. If you said the Yankees were going to finish second, the Rays would finish third, the Blue Jays would finish fourth. Like, you could maneuver those three teams around any way you wanted to maneuver them around. Mm-hmm. I think right now, first place and fifth place is taken care of. It's the three in the middle that there's a lot of unknowns, right? A lot of it's about health. A lot of it's about, you know, the lineups living up to what people think they could live up to? The Rays, do you have any idea? Like, I mean, a lot of that's probably rotation and
first
health.
First year, Kevin, I don't know what to make of it. I swear to God, I don't know what to make of the Rays.
Can they score runs? Like, what's their plan, right? They always have a plan offensively. Is it trying to hit homers? Is it, you know, stealing more bases this year? There's different rules that they could use to their advantage. Like, there, I'm sure they'll come up with some way to make themselves relevant and give themselves a chance throughout the entire season. But, yeah, I don't think so. I think it's sort of cut and dry. It wasn't so much if Gerrit Cole was healthy, but right now for me it is just Corbin Burns and all the talent and a couple of MVP candidates that the Orioles have. It'd be tough not to say that they're the front runners to win the American League East and make a decent run in the playoffs. You know, could you say that they're going to win the World Series? Not me. I think there's better teams. I think the Astros are better. I think the Phillies are better. There's better teams in the National League for me than the Orioles. So, yeah, look, it's going to be – I think it's there's enough teams at least to make the playoffs fun when it gets here.
There was a minor league deal. I didn't say minor league deal. That's not true. There was a three-team deal made earlier today involving the Marlins, the Yankees, and the Rays. And John Birdie, who, if you remember, was basically a career minor leaguer with the Blue Jays and has really put together a nice career for himself. John Birdie has been traded to the New York Yankees. In return, the Rays are going to get catcher Ben Roethlisberger. This is, of course, all depending on medicals. And there's a couple of prospects Miami's getting as well. One of them is John Cruz from the New York Yankees. And that deal has not yet been finalized. There's also another prospect, Shane Sasaki, who is an outfield prospect. I think we call him prospect. He's a minor leaguer in the Rays system. He's going to the Marlins in the deal as well. So it's a minor deal. Ben Roethlisberger's a guy that that the Yankees had some hope for. I think they got him from Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. That's a minor deal. His teams set their rosters. John Birdie, though, I mean, that's an example, man.
Yeah, you went to the Marlins. You got an opportunity.
Yeah.
You take advantage
of
that opportunity.
Take advantage of your opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know if it's paying dues or not. I mean, you get an opportunity. You didn't really know what he would turn out to be. Again, you got to have playing time. And when you don't get playing time, you're not allowed to show what you can do. And you got to have a little longer leash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fortunately, he got to go to the Marlins and get that, made some offensive adjustments, right? He's ambushing some pitches. He can pull the ball in the air. He can hit a home run occasionally. I mean, he can do some things defensively. Like, it's a nice little lad. So, yeah, this is what you do, right? If you're a team that's had some injuries and are trying to sort of finalize the edges of your team to make it better, to just, you know, it's those couple of games. American League East, I told you, those three teams are bunched together. You could make an argument for all three of those teams. If we're putting the Orioles at the top, the other three teams and the Red Sox at the bottom, the three teams, it would take maybe one little move, one win in April to put that team ahead of the other two teams. So it's interesting.
We're going to be joined later on by Trevor May, former MLB pitcher, co-host of the Rates and Barrels podcast. He's also an MLB Network radio host. He'll be along at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk to him about, we'll look ahead to the season as a former pitcher. I also want to talk to him about, you know, the run we've seen on pitching injuries in baseball, something we talked to Greg Maddux about yesterday. And then we'll give our picks and predictions in the 3 o'clock hour and do some props, do some overs and unders, see how much stuff we can get wrong. I can't remember what we did last. I think we did pretty well last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, these things are hard to do. I mean, it's you're trying to predict the future. Do I look like a khaki to you? And this is what you're trying to do, right? I mean, again, there's some top heavy divisions where it's the obvious choice, and then the wild cards, there's some teams there, you know, in both leagues there's probably five or six teams you got to choose from to make a wild card spot and make a decent run at it. So it's kind of fun to talk about that, and that's why adding the couple of teams at the wild card does is it makes those teams that are on the fringe relevant throughout the entire season, make the fan base happy. You know, you're selling more tickets. You're looking forward to an entire season when probably you wouldn't if they didn't have as many wild card spots. And I think this year you could throw the Jays into that. There's a lot of unknowns with the Jays, right? And, you know, this is what makes it sort of fun talking about it the day before the season starts.
I asked you yesterday about the who was indispensable on the Blue Jays. Anyway, a little bit of
back and forth about Kevin Gausman. And we also obviously talked about the bullpen because we're led to believe that Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson won't be with the team at the start of the year. Is there somebody in this lineup other than Vladdy? We all assume that if Vladdy has a good year, it can make a real difference. Is there somebody in this lineup that you think is capable of not having a transformational year, but is capable of having the type of year that really elevates the possibility of this team?
Yeah, I think we know the first four guys are very important. I think Dalton Varsho, we talked about right. That, right, hitting the five hole, and they'll maneuver him around depending on how he's doing and how the team's doing. I think it's the two catchers. I really do. With what's at the bottom, at the bottom of the order, mm-hmm. right? You could have Kiermaier, you could have IKF, you could have Biggio. All three of those could stink at the same time, and in the bottom of your order wouldn't be real good. And that would put a lot of emphasis on the first six guys, and maybe the sixth guy sort of booking in it, right? You'd have Springer, mm-hmm. and then whoever the catcher is. That's spot is very important because the six hole tends to come up a lot of the times with a lot of traffic on the bases. So having Kirky do things that he was doing in spring training, again, spring training is not everything, but it would tell you sort of maybe how the season will sort of, especially the beginning of the season, might start for a certain player. Mm-hmm. You know, Kirky's made some adjustments. He looks a little bit better. His bat looks a little bit quicker. He's able to get to pitches. He's hitting the breaking ball to right center consistently,
John
at least
Schneider
in spring training.
Says he looks stronger.
I don't know. What's that look like?
He says he looks stronger.
I think he's more grounded. I think that's what it is, right? He's using his legs a little bit more. You know, they've had to sort of use him a little bit more behind the plate, and I think they want to because Danny Jansen's not around enough. I can't say it any other way. And I don't think that's what's best for Kirky. Might be what's best for the team because he is a good catcher. He calls a good game. He blocks behind the plate the way he's supposed to block. He controls a veteran staff, which is all you can ask for. But then you flip it on the offensive side, and because he's had to do things defensively that probably he wasn't prepared for, they weren't prepared for to basically force him into that, and that made him suffer a little bit offensively. So he just looked a little bit better. Again, it gets back to that. When you watch him hit – and you see the pitches that you think he should be hammering into certain locations or parts of the field, and it actually goes there, then you're starting to think to yourself, at least the things he's doing in the offseason and the things he's been doing in spring training to continually work and get that headed and to continue to stay in that direction is working. He's a big deal. And so will Danny Jansen if he can get back and play. Yeah. I mean, I want to say 90 games, but, boy, I may be – begging a little bit too much for 90, but say Danny plays 75 games and hits 25 homers or close to 25 homers. That's a big deal hitting the six hole. That's more RBIs. It's more runs scored. You win more games that way.
Yeah, it's it was kind of funny because we spent a lot of time talking through spring training about different guys and different situations, and we had to do a piece on Sportsnet.ca. All of us had to get together and pick kind of the storyline that we think maybe had been underreported or haven't been followed enough. And I say, you know, the thing that stands out to me is, you know, George Springer last year, the healthiest year he's had in, I don't know, 5-6 years, played more games, statistically his worst year. Now, that's not a good thing when you're an older player and you're healthy and your numbers fall off. And, you know, I seem to be the only one that thought that was the thing. And we talked a lot about George Springer, but the more I thought about it, you know, and I started looking at what Alejandro Kirk has been offensively when he is good and what Danny Jansen can be offensively when he's healthy. And I started looking at that spot in the lineup. I go, they could be difference makers for this team.
Yeah,
they really could.
It's being able to make quicker adjustments. I had a ground ball my first at bat. I can adjust to that. I don't swing at that. I use my feet a little bit more. Like, it just seems like he's not real good at rotating the hips, getting off the backside. That's not what he is. He's more of a level it out contact guy, sort of, you know, fillet it to where it needs to go. If he can consistently do that with a dude standing at second, that's what they want. That's sort of the theme taken away from spring training is the conversation. Be yourself and be a tough yourself. If that at bat arises in the third inning with a dude standing at second and he got you out on a breaking ball, your first at bat, don't let him do it your second at bat. It's that thing, right? Make the adjustment quicker because you have talent. You will help the team win a baseball game. And the longer that lineup is, the better off they will be because there's going to be some hiccups, right? It's just it's a normal flow of a season to have some of those. You just want to put the sort of the lineup together to where they can make adjustments quicker. And you would hope that Danny Jansen gets back. Alejandro Kirk can do that. And Dalton Varsho continues to grow. You're asking for something around the 25 homer mark. He gets on base more. He'll steal more bases, that kind of thing, play great defense. And other than that, don't put the ceiling so high that it puts so much pressure on him that say he goes 0 for 10, then he falls off the cliff, and then he's hitting a .170 with runners in scoring position. You don't want that. So just simplify it, and hopefully you see the best out of all these guys because they're going to need it. They need it. You see the schedule. We've been talking about this. They got some really good pitching they're about to face. We're going to find out if that thing they've been preaching in spring training and, you know, get something you can do damage on. Well, what's good pitching do to you? They don't give you stuff.
Yeah, I just – so why do I think – that we are really, we're really overplaying the first 10 games of the year.
Five and five is fine. Yeah, look, it's what they didn't do in the offseason. You just mentioned, you started the show with that. Like, what they didn't do,
even if they'd gone out and gotten, even if they'd gone out and got Cody Bellinger, I'd still take
the expectation be a little higher. You mentioned how good the Orioles are. I mean, nobody thinks that the Jays are going to win the American League East.
Well, Doug Glanville picked them to win the World Series.
I mean, that's again, every once in a while it takes that one guy, right? Man, good for Doug. I mean, if that's how he feels.
We got to get Doug Glanville.
So it sounds to me like he threw a bunch of teams against the wall, and that's the one.
No.
He picked.
No, he had.
A lot of things got to go right for that to happen, right? Obviously. So
to your point, though, it's interesting when you look at the national writers and the various publications and the various websites. It is interesting when you look at the American League East. The consensus seems to be the Baltimore Orioles. The consensus seems to be that Boston's not going to be that good. And then literally everybody else. I mean, you got people picking, you know, you've got projections projecting the Yankees to finish fourth with one of the worst records they've had in the last 10 years. You've got projections having the Jays finishing fourth.
What
place.
If the Red Sox pitching is better? What if they play better defense? Because we know they're going to play better defense. I mean, they got one of the best left-handed hitters in baseball endeavors. Like, you know, you got something to build around. It's supporting cast. They're going to score runs. It's how do you keep the other team from scoring? Run prevention. What if they do play better defense? What if the rotation's better than they think it is? Like, and then all of a sudden now you got more competition in the American League East. This is the point why you need to get off to a good start. 5-5 for me, I would think a lot of Jays fans are rolling their eyes at that. I know I will be. 5-5 ain't going to be. There it is.
Wow.
And then you come home and you're facing the Mariners, who might arguably have the best rotation in baseball.
No, they don't. Not now, they don't.
Well, because Woo's missed. You didn't really know what you were going to get anyway. But the first four guys, I mean, that's bringing it. Again, it's about consistently doing what you can do to your fullest.
Is there a team you think they can beat this year? Because you're frightened of the Rays. Frightened of the Astros. You're frightened of the Yankees, and you're frightened of the Mariners.
No, there's only one team. Well, there's a couple of teams in the American League. I mean, it's the Rangers are really good. The Yankees are really good, even without Gerrit Cole. The Astros are the best team for me in the American League, and the Orioles are really good. Like, there's a lot of teams that the Jays are going to have to consistently do some things. That's why you asked me yesterday, who can they less afford to go periods of time without? And I mentioned four in the rotation and four in the lineup.
Eight guys.
That's a collection of people, and I'm still sticking with it. And I didn't mention the couple of dudes at the back end of the bullpen.
Ten guys they can. If they have 10 irreplaceable players, they must be the best team in baseball.
Well, there's some things got to go right, okay? Because of how the other teams in the American League are stacking up. And, again, the Mariners – they're sort of like the Jays. They're a run prevention team who have some head-scratching questions about their lineup. What if Ty France shows up? And it's Ty France a couple of years ago.
They don't have Matt
now
Brash.
Your lineup's a little different. Like, it's,
they don't have
the window's open there for you to play good consistently. If you're going to get beat, have the other team beat you. Don't beat yourself. If they do that because they have talent, they should be okay. If they can consistently look like Vladdy getting picked off at second, that's what you remember last year at the end of the season, right? That's
one of the things
most
I remember.
Fans remember is him getting picked off.
I also remember Kikuchi coming into the bullpen.
That didn't help either.
Anyhow. Yeah, I don't know. If they come back 5-5, I'm certainly...
Well, the season's not over, but I would still like to I would like to see them translating on the field against good teams on the road with wins. 5-5 just tells me it's the same old Blue Jays offensively. That's why I want to see it. Like, I want to see what they're preaching to everybody actually translate. What's 6-4 ain't too much to ask. 7-3 might be. 6-4 is not.
I think 5-5 is just fine.
There you go.
Hold serve. You come home. You got the Mariners.
Yeah, good luck. Ooh, well, they don't like hitting at home anyway. So,
well, we don't know. Maybe the ballpark's changed. Maybe it's changed. We don't know. I'm sorry. Everything I read, everything I hear is the guy got off the hot start. Well, no crap, Sherlock. Everybody needs to get off. You know what's good? 9-1 is good.
Okay,
it's great to get off to a hot start. But we're really hanging a lot in these 10 games.
The Braves and the Dodgers could afford to get off to slow starts. You're telling me in the American League East that the Blue Jays, and the way the American League is, and probably you're going to have to win 89 games to make the playoffs, that you could get off to a slow start? Yeah, it'd be tough.
The way
we're hearing behind the scenes that the clubhouse, how we fix it? Like, it's fixed now, so I've been told. But that's the thing, right, is... You just fingers crossed, hope that everything sort of comes together and they throw in strike one, be efficient, run the bases the way you're supposed to run them, and get an occasional big-time hit. That's what you need to do. Don't have to do it all the time. An occasional one.
10 games.
Well, you could add the ones at home, too.
What if there are three teams in the AL East that are 5-5? Every year it's the same thing. Every year... I mean, there are common storylines. And every year, we got to get off the hot start. Not really.
Yeah, no. Not for me. The last couple of years, I mean, they were in the conversation to win a World Series. That would mean you could lean on some things because you have talent and experience. And, you know, we can overcome that. You think mentally and offensively they could overcome that? I'm not saying that 5-5 is the end of the season, but I'm saying that I think confidence-wise, it would be nice for them to come home 6-4. That's all.
We are going to give our picks in the 3 o'clock.
I am picking the Jays to make the playoffs.
I know you are. I know you are because you were scared not to.
Absolutely not. They play really good defense. They pitch really well, and their bullpen's really good.
You're unhealthy. You're like
me. How do you not pick them?
You're like me. I mean, I was not going to pick them. But I thought, yeah, I might as well. I feel optimistic. I feel optimistic. But we'll deal with our picks and our individual winners later as well. And as we mentioned, John Schneider and Ross Atkins are doing media availabilities at 3 o'clock. It is a workout day for the Blue Jays at Tropicana Field. We are awaiting. I mean, I don't think they have to give us the actual roster, if I'm not mistaken, until tomorrow at noon. That's normally what it is on the postseason. I could be wrong. But we'll get a better sense today, I would think, from the Blue Jays. I mean, there seems to be, you know, Yariel Rodriguez, we're led to believe, is going to start the year in the minors.
Yeah.
There seems to be some question about the tail end of the bullpen. And frankly, we still really don't know the extent of the injury to Jordan Romano or Eric Swanson. We were kind of led to believe Eric Swanson was a little further ahead than Romano, just reading into what John Schneider had said.
I think what you're saying, if Wes Parsons makes the team, it'd be nice for John to tell us why that is. That's all.
We shall see.
Yeah.
We shall see. Trevor May is a former MLB pitcher. He's co-host of the Rates and Barrels podcast. He's an MLB Network radio host as well. He'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, our job just got a little easier. We are going to be carrying John Schneider and Ross Atkins media availability live from Tropicana Field at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock for John Schneider,
3:30 for Ross Atkins. And that'll give us a, you know, better idea, hopefully, of the final composition of the roster in addition to getting. I mean, I guess the thing we're kind of waiting on right now is what did Kevin Gausman say yesterday? I mean, we're, you know, we haven't heard anything. Nothing's leaked out or anything. But I guess that's kind of the one outstanding thing, Kevin?
Yeah, I guess.
In terms of health?
Yeah, yeah. Look, that's, you know, that's first and foremost, I believe. I just wonder how they're going to handle the last two spots in the bullpen. I mean, we've heard Parsons, which I does that make any sense? I mean, they're worried about innings. I would assume that would be the case. That's why I'm interested in hearing. I would assume whoever's there will be asking that. The first question is, you know, how you figuring out who's going to start and who will help you the most to begin the season, those last two spots in the pen. So, yeah, those two spots, and then Gausman's a big deal, and you know, when is he pitching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that is the big question, and we will find out. I said 3 o'clock we'll carry the manager's availability live from Tropicana Field, and 3:30 Ross Atkins media availability live from Tropicana Field. Let's go to Trevor May. He's a former MLB pitcher. He's co-host of the Rates and Barrels podcast, MLB Network radio host. You can follow him on Twitter at I am Trevor May. Trevor, thanks for joining us today. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Want to get some of your takes on your picks on the divisions and individual awards. I saw your YouTube picks. But before that, we had Greg Maddux on yesterday. And one thing we've been talking about this year, and it's particular to the Blue Jays with Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson hurt, and you know Kevin Gausman, we think that he's been given the all clear. As a former pitcher, like every year it seems to me that we go, oh my God, I can't believe there's so many pitching injuries. And then the next year we go, this has got to be the most pitching injuries I've ever seen. And then the year after that we go, it's the most pitching injuries I've ever. Is there something going on here? Are pitchers getting hurt in your mind now more than ever? And why do you think that is?
It sure feels like that. And it is hard to tell if it's like a recency bias thing or not. I hear that a lot. It's funny because it's one of those things that there's actual numbers of, and it should be pretty easy to look up.
Requires work, though.
Yeah, there's no aggregate number anywhere that's like because of the nature of the injuries, and they're all different,
right?
And they come from different reasons. So how do you group those things? I didn't mean to go full data science on you there at the beginning, but it's something I've searched for and I can't really find. But I'd say that that's not unfounded for sure. There's definitely something going on. It's actually a guy who made a great point about it and made some valid arguments was, you know, Chris Bassett. Talking about guys trying to throw as hard as they can, and that's being incentivized. You know, our game is always been incentivized to get good at certain things. A lot of that is driven by, you know, free agency or what's going to keep you in the big leagues or what's going to get you there. And depends on where you are in your career and how you prioritize what you're trying to get better at. But lately it's because of the way science and technology has come along, is we know a lot about how you make your pitches move the most and how to throw the hardest. And if you're not doing that, everyone else is doing that. So if you're not doing that, you're not doing everything you can to have the best career you can. And that's just a non-starter for a professional athlete. Yeah. So I think we're seeing guys just taking the chances. Like chances are being taken that maybe weren't being taken in the past because the payoff could be potentially huge.
It has always kind of surprised me that we've come so far in analytics. I don't want to get into an analytics debate here at all, but we've come so far in analytics, and you hit on something that I don't think fans and even some members of the media keep in mind. Guys do this. Guys want to get paid for what they do. And I look at the arbitration system where basically you're using old school stats to convince people. And it just strikes me as odd that we use analytics for everything, but when it comes time to determine how much money Kevin Barker or Trevor May are going to get paid in arbitration, we're going back to the old numbers for the most part. For the most part, we're going back to the old numbers. I don't know if that's ever going to change. I don't know if that's ever going to change.
Yeah, I don't think it will either. You got to remember, though, now we're talking directly about where we are at basically the end of a journey where there's going to be money given at the end, and you're right there.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you know, we use a lot of I could talk a lot about arbitration, how silly it is in a lot of ways.
Please do. Is. Yeah.
There's a lot of, it's a goofy system. And at the end of the day, it's someone's making a decision that a lot of times isn't very well read on baseball. They're a professional lawyer or an arbitrator. So it's that by itself. Like, if we're arguing stats and the person that is supposed to make the decision doesn't understand stats, what are we doing here? And that happens more often than not, frankly. So it comes down to this. What stats fit your argument best? So we're seeing a lot of players making the analytics arguments and then teams making the non-analytics arguments, unless the analytics were worse, and then the team suddenly cares about the analytics. So if we're coming down to negotiating pay, it's less about the actual nuts and bolts of the arguments being made and just how you make them. And that's just kind of how law works. Mm-hmm. So it's silly, but I don't know if that's going to change in any really meaningful way. I think slowly over time, it's just like anything else. You got to set precedents. So as soon as a team accepts some number as something that matters, then suddenly now other teams in the future are going to have to do that. Like that argument's valid now. And that's just how the system works. But it's turned into this. It's just always going to be behind the game and how on-field decisions are made. It's going to be a few years behind because the team wants to pay less money and the player usually wants more money. So whatever gets you to that end goal the best in an arbitrator's eyes is the way to go. And I don't think that's the best way to manage these things. So arbitration is a little bit silly in that way. You're totally right.
Trevor, we had Greg Maddux on yesterday, and he was talking about he wants to throw just hard enough. And it got me thinking about opening day and you know, how you sort of work into a season. You want to stay healthy all season, right? You don't want to blow it all out the first week of the season. And I was fortunate enough to make a team out of spring training. The heart rate goes up. It's just different, right? When you're standing on the line and you've made a team out of spring training, it's harder to control everything around you, right? It's part of it, how you sort of go about trying to do that. How long did it take you to sort of just fall into, I got to make a good pitch here. I don't want to overthrow. You know, there's a lot of things that could come into that. Weather, hitters not ready. You know, you could sort of get them out easier early in the season than you could, say, middle of the season, late in the season, right? Everybody's sort of trying to get their feet wet and that kind of thing. How hard is that to do as a pitcher, knowing that, you know, this time of the year, you could get away with a hanging breaking ball, or you could get away with a missing, trying to go up and maybe leave one down the middle? Is that tough to do this early in the season?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it kind of bleeds over from spring training, because it's the same way. You're trying to work on things, but you also don't want to be like, you know, especially early in the year, and you're like a back-end bullpen guy, and you're throwing in the fourth inning after the starter, and you're facing some guy, a lot of guys with their numbers in the 90s with no name on the back.
Yep.
It's hard to, like, first of all, I couldn't, like, game plan at all, which is a big part. Like, I want to know a little bit. So not knowing anything about a guy is just, like, a foreign thing to me. So then I had have to be like, okay, now what am I working on? And how can I – should I just only throw sliders? Because I want to work on throwing it in the zone and then moving it out of the zone. Like, I had to have something specifically like that. And then one day, now you can't just do that. You have to get the guy out. You have to. And it doesn't matter how you do it. And so it's almost like being aware of what it might take to get someone out. Like you said, pitchers always have the advantage early in the year, usually because it's colder, because guys haven't had as many at bats, because it takes a little bit longer to get going that way, and pitchers just have an advantage. And then as the year goes on, it's harder and harder, or it gets more even, and then everyone's kind of parallel to each other. And so you have to find, you got to, like, take it with a grain of salt and analyze yourself only and not the results, and then that will help you the best. That's very, very, very hard to do, because it's, especially when you're young, you don't have much experience. It's exciting because you're being successful. But how many times have we seen a young guy come up first April, brush it, and then suddenly wheels fall off and they can't find those wheels again? It happens really, really often. And that's kind of the dynamic you're talking about. So it took me probably till, like, I came back from Tommy John. It took me 4 years probably to really just, like, be like, this is just what is happening right now. And but just know that there's still going to be things you need to work on, even if you're being successful right now in April.
Trevor, through your career, you filled a number of roles, and you know, we always focus on the guys at the back end of the bullpen, and we focus on the starters. You know, one of the sort of storylines we're following with the Blue Jays right now is the actual composition of the final three bullpen spots. It's up in the air. When you are one of those guys where you're waiting to find out what your role is on a team, how difficult is that at the end of spring training going into a regular season, kind of, you
I'm on the team, but I sort of kind of don't know whether they want me for length or when I'm going to be used. Am I going to be a spot starter? Am I going to be an opener? I don't know. How difficult is that for guys mentally?
I think it's extremely difficult, especially for the guys who are like starters their whole careers. And they're like, hey, we're going to bring you into the big league team, but you're going to be the long guy to start the year. And they haven't given up on that dream of being a starter yet. Right. Like they still probably could be a starter. There's just no spot. That's probably the hardest thing to do, I think, as a reliever, because you really don't know. You don't know, you know, you don't know what guys, you haven't established like what young guys are going to be pulled really fast, or if a veteran guy's going to struggle, but they're going to let him go. And you're like preparing, but you're not going to go in. Like it's really, really tough to do. And especially if you don't have a lot of experience either. So if it's, especially if you're a rookie, like you're like, I really don't know what to do. This is something I've never done before. And I think that's the hardest. I think that not having a role though, especially if, for example, let's take the three guys waiting. They know they're going to be like the number 6, 7, and 8 out of the bullpen probably.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of figure it out by process of elimination. Like, you know what the other five guys are probably going to be doing, Meza's probably going to face lefties. Your closer is, like usually teams know these things. So you're like, okay, well, I don't have to worry about closing. He's the setup guy, so I don't have to worry about throwing the A. So that leaves these innings. And I'm probably those guys. I might be the guy that throws when we're behind because they don't really know. That's where you start. You usually start there. That's the dirty job.
Right.
The innings eater, we're behind. Just keep us kind of close, please. But if you struggle, it's okay to struggle. It's more okay to struggle now than in other bigger spots. And that's kind of how I did it. I was like, okay, these guys have these roles, so I'm probably in one of the other ones, and then just gotta play it by ear for a couple weeks and see where you're at. Especially in April, because there's no starter throwing more than five, at least for the first rotation through. And so relievers throw a lot at the beginning too. So it's pretty easy to figure it out, actually. It gets easier because a lot of relievers are throwing for pretty much every team. And you can establish yourself that way. But I would say that swing role is far and away the hardest thing to do.
Trevor, with teams on the bubble like the Blue Jays, me and Jeff had a mini argument about it. He thinks 5-5 on a road trip's okay. I think because of the way offensively they looked last year, the rumblings of, it's a different approach, swing at what you can do damage on. And then if you say that and then you go on the road and you go 5-5, it sort of sends that, like, sort of same old Blue Jays, right? Offensively, they're going to have to grind out an entire season, but 6-4 just feels different. Do you think that's the case? Like, am I overthinking this, that the first 10 games of the season really don't mean anything?
If
they are there, if they're 500, that's okay. They'll move on and they'll figure it out from there. Or 6-4 would be a great thing and you could gain momentum from that.
I'll be honest. I'm a little bit more in your direction.
Nice.
I think the mindset of maybe the fan base and the people watching.
Yeah.
6-4 is way more different than 5-5, especially with how the season ended last year, especially with, there was a lot of like, if we could just do this one thing, like we could separate ourselves a little bit. And that just never happened, or some injury would happen, or another starter would go down and you'd have two starting pitchers at that point. Like, geez, we were so close. We'd have a really good road trip and then come home and go like 3-6. And you're like, well, that's undone, and we're 500 again. So I think that starting strong, especially on the road, especially in a three-city trip. I don't know what the schedule is, but if they start on a three-city trip to start the year, and you can go 6-4, that's a tough trip to start the year with.
Mm-hmm.
You can do 6-4 there. You should feel really good about that, especially if you come back with the team intact and everyone, for the most part, everyone's feeling good, and you can go smoothly into that home opener. I think that's a big deal for not only the fan base, actually the team too. You feel good about it because that's a big step, no matter when it is in the season. If you do it well at the beginning of the year, I think that's a hopeful thing for the
awesome
for how the rest of your might.
So right, Jeff, I'll wave the white flag. I'll wave the white flag. So I saw that you picked, I think you picked Gunnar Henderson as World Series MVP, would suggest to me that you think the Baltimore Orioles are going to win the American League. And you're certainly not the only person to make that pick. How do you see the East shaping up right now?
When I made that video, by the way, guys, if you ever want to make a YouTube video making predictions for a season, just do it one day, because if you wait for information, it's the hardest thing on the planet to do. So make sure you record it in one day and then release the next day. Things change so fast.
Yeah.
That was a nightmare. So I made that video. I had the Orioles taken first. This was right after they signed or they traded for Burns.
Right.
So I thought they were missing their true ace. Bradish is great, but he doesn't have the experience that they have arms. I think that's pretty clear. But they didn't have the guy. And he's the guy now. Now they have a guy. The game one, Garrett Cole. Game one, you know, like whoever it is in their division, because everyone's got an ace. Mm-hmm. You want him matched up. So I think that changed them a little bit. They got such good young talent. I'm just a huge fan of like Adley Rutschman. I think that kid is going to be a Buster Posey type leader, and he just has it all. So like they're just an impressive team after playing them last year too. There's just not a lot of holes in that lineup. So I had them taken first, but I also am a believer that Rodon takes. He flips the coin again, and he has another Rodon year. I think he's going to be much, much, much better, much more valuable than he was last year. But this was before Garrett Cole went down. So I had the Yankees hanging around with him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case now. I think it's a lot closer in the middle three teams, you know, with the Rays, with you guys, and with the Yankees. It's like a three-sided coin for me a little bit at this point, maybe with the advantage going to the Yankees there. And you never know with the Rays. They got rid of Glass now, but they seem to just like appear constantly with that team. Like you could just give me a list of guys I've never heard of. I'm like, well, they're probably all good.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that guy's in the bullpen. I bet you he's got a great slider.
Yeah,
there's probably a really good chance. So I never count them out because I think it's stupid to do that, but it's hard to point to anything specific. So, I think it's really open in that way, but I think the Orioles are probably the most complete team at the moment. Which is crazy to say because their average age is like 22 years old, but they're a really good team. They added some depth pieces of some older guys like Kimbrel out in the pen. I think it's going to be big. Even if it's not him throwing the ball and getting the big outs all the time, I think he's going to help the young guys with experience. So I'm still pretty high on the Orioles. I think they're a pretty complete team. But I think that wild card spots in the AL are pretty wide open. The Central's still the Central. They're going to have one team that makes the playoffs. They're all going to be like 500 all year. And the West is, you know, who knows what happens with the top two there and then the Mariners. Like, I think that it's between the East and the West for who produces all of the wild card teams this year. So it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch, but I got the Red Sox kind of just hanging out in the bottom there. I don't think they have any illusions that it's gonna be a successful season after losing Giolito. That was the only guy they signed and then they lost him. It's not great in Boston.
Is there a team that you think maybe people are too high on? In the American League or National League?
Team people are too high on.
Or overselling, I guess, is how I would put it.
Maybe you think honestly, the Braves could take a step back. Maybe that was one.
I'd say that's might be the most likely thing. The thing about it is, I mean, I think there is no way to be the correct amount of high on the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. I think everyone just by the way that they by their offseason, people are just going to be, there's just no way to live up to those. You can win the World Series. They got to win every game to live up to those expectations at this point. So that's going to be a disappointment in some way, somewhere. It's just going to be. So maybe that's my call there. But I think that a lot of teams got better than they originally thought. I think that's more of the narrative. I think like the Tigers are a better team than people are giving them credit for. After playing against them towards the end of the year last year, when they were like kind of coming together, I was like, this is a pretty good team. They got some good pitchers. They added really good players. I think the Tigers have a chance to win their division. People yell at me for that, but I genuinely believe that. Another team I think that on the other side and the national side is the Reds. I think they're exciting. I'm really excited about them. I think signing Sonny Gray was huge. They got some electricity in that rotation. Like that's a rotation that they'll click. Like you're like, this might be the best stuff wise in the, they could be, they have that potential. So those are the two teams that I got kind of like outside the box on. And then, you know, this is one of my teams. Maybe the Twins fans are a little too high, just a little bit. Because there's a couple of things that they're counting on happening that haven't happened yet.
Byron Buxton staying healthy.
Buxton and Royce Lewis. Yes.
Yeah.
Giving you like 140 games.
Yeah.
If they do though, now they're way better than people thought. So it's just, I love those guys. I know them personally. They're friends of mine and they're absolute amazing athletes. And I would love more than anything to see them play day in and day out with any injuries, not even being mentioned. That would be phenomenal for baseball and for that team. But yeah, maybe that needs to happen though. We need to see it happen first.
Yeah. Trevor, really good of you to join
That's
us.
Awesome
Thanks
stuff.
So much, man. Great insight.
Thanks,
be well.
Buddy.
Of course. Thanks guys.
Take care. Trevor May. Former MLB pitcher, co-host of the Rates and Barrels podcast, MLB Network radio host. And he agreed with me about the 10 games, I think.
No, he didn't.
I thought he said 5-5.
It's again when you don't do what you thought you should have done in the offseason.
I do get the point.
And now you're talking about the way you're talking about the core, and you usually don't say that about the core if they're really good last year. Now you're saying they need to make up for some things and they need to carry their load. That's basically what this comes around to, and they're trying to do it with a sort of a different approach, right? Take the thing you can't do damage on. Are they capable of doing that? That's the thing you got to ask yourself, and you sort of need to see it. Like, you need to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and for me, it's a giant difference between 5-5 or 6-4. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
No, listen, I think
just a different feel to it.
I will say this. I think for the fan base, if they come back and they're 6-4, yeah. Because I'm trying to figure out how to put this delicately. I don't think same old is going to excite people this year. I don't think 5-5, .500. Yeah, they're the Blue Jays.
What you're saying is that quite a few 3-13s with runners in scoring position ain't going to do it, right?
Bingo.
You need to see better of that. Bingo. So, yeah, that's all. Like, I know it's only one game, but you just sort of need to see the step forward. And I just think it would be easier for them, for fans of the Jays, not to sort of say on the bubble of flip-flopping like the Mariners and the Blue Jays all of a sudden after 10 games. I'm not saying that would happen.
I think it's going to be that type of year, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it will really be. Because they're sort of the same kind of team. But I think that's what makes it fun. That's why you tune in to watch baseball, is there's sort of a lot of teams that have the same problem. It's just which team can fix it quicker and maintain it an entire season. And ultimately, will be the end. Because most of the teams are smart enough with their khakis to figure out run prevention and who they're using in the right spot of the pen and with power and that thing. It's the offensive side. So hopefully they figure it out. And it's more fun if more teams are in it.
So the Jays will start their regular season tomorrow. It'll be 4 o'clock first pitch. We'll be on right up to first pitch on Sportsnet 360. We'll be on the main channels up until Blue Jays Central at 3 o'clock, and then Kevin and myself will be doing Blue Jays talk immediately following the game tomorrow. Again, 4 o'clock first pitch, the Jays opener. They've got 4 against Tampa, 3 against Houston, 3 in the Bronx against the Yankees. No Gerrit Cole, no Justin Verlander. I mean, Houston's got a ton of pitching injuries.
I can say this. Wes Parsons made the team, Mitch White made the team, and Nate Pearson made the team. They all have made the team.
They have all made the team.
So the Wes Parsons thing is intriguing.
It's length. Probably length.
Well, it's the unknown of what they're not going to get with their innings in their rotation, right? Yeah. They got an older rotation.
So Zach, the oldest. Zach Pop was kind of the guy that we thought was on the bubble.
And Little was the guy, too, that were sort of, do you take 3 lefties? Do you need a righty that you really don't know how to use, right? Can you get a lefty out of Zach Pop? There's some unknowns there. Maybe Parsons, they like what they saw in spring training. So, yeah, it's with those 3 guys, you know, you hopefully don't have to abuse them. And I think the Parsons thing just sounds like with White that it's sort of right. You can match up against the right team. Maybe you can give your offense and your team a chance to win.
I just want Zach Pop to go down and close out games at AAA. I want to see if he can do it.
I think it's sort of what they are. Like he is sort of what he is, right? Can he get a lefty out? Yeah. That's all I care about.
We haven't seen it. We will be joining John Schneider's news conference at 3 o'clock. He is doing his media availability at Tropicana Field, and we'll get a sense from John at that point, obviously, on where the roster sits. Ross Atkins will be along at 3:30. It'll be his first media availability, I believe, first full media availability in a while. So we'll look forward to that. That'll be it.
What? Why are you looking at me like that?
Because you gave me that. You gave me the stink eye. We'll do that. Stop it. We'll do that at 3:30.
Can I say that? You're welcome.
And we will make our picks. Be quiet. And we will make our picks and predictions. Don't go anywhere. Because you never know what the hell can happen here, and you sure don't know what's going to be said. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fat at Sportsnet.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I might wear a tie tomorrow.
Go for it.
I might wear a shirt and tie. I think we should. I think we should have days where we
don't tell me
where we
do.
Dress up a bit.
Enough people tell me what to do. I'm
yeah,
good.
You really don't. That's
yeah,
true.
I'm good.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm good.
Yeah, I apologize. I mean, we used to wear.
I like my shirts. I wear.
Opening day, it used to be a thing to wear a shirt and tie.
It's the home
day.
Opener. You show up. You wear your sports jacket. Everybody says nice jacket.
And
nice,
they throw it away.
Nice shoes. Yeah. And then they never see them again.
That is very that is very true.
That's it.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
It is, right?
It is Blair and Barker. It is the second hour. Is this the second day we've done 2 hours, right? Yeah,
boy,
second day
good.
We've done 2 hours. We'll be on from 2 to 4 tomorrow, right up the first pitch on 360. And we'll be on from 2 to 3 on the other Sportsnet channels. And then we'll be doing Blue Jays talk following the game. Mm. John Schneider's the manager of the Blue Jays. He's talking to the media at Tropicana Field. You'd much rather hear from him than us. So here we go.
I think you're looking at it, you know, kind of like how our starters are going to be rolled out, you know, innings we need to cover, how they're throwing the ball, obviously, and what's best for everybody. So with Yariel, I think just building him up consistently, having a pretty, you know, set plan with him, and we want a lot of his innings to be with us and to be, you know, 100% when he is with us. And then with Zach, in comparison to Wes or Nate, a little bit more length with the other guys. I know we got Mitch here, too, that can provide that. But I think the first couple times through our starting rotation, there's going to be some innings to cover. So that, in a combination with how they're throwing the ball, that's how we landed.
For someone like Wes, who hasn't made an opening day since 2019, can you appreciate how much he's grounded to have to go with KBO, back surgery, and all that to get to where he is today?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we got such a quick look at him last year in game 162. And then I think watching him this spring and kind of how he came in, how his stuff was playing, you like having those conversations. There's a lot of tough conversations, you know, at the end of camp, and that was one of the better ones, yeah, for sure.
You were judged at IL for Romano and Swanson to start?
Yeah. More of the same, really. They're still growing and kind of building up. They're over at the PDC. You'll probably see them here this weekend, but nothing really new to report for those two guys. They're still going.
So no set date for them to get on the mound?
Nope.
And what about Alec? What's with
him? He pitched today over at the PDC in a two-inning sim game, 34 pitches. Likely IL to start the year for him. I don't know if that's actually set in stone yet, but wanting him to build up, you know. So I think you look at today, and then from today, assuming all goes well, next time out, you know, add on some more pitches, and then hopefully in a more competitive game environment. Not sure yet. You know, he's here. He's feeling good. Everything was good after he pitched in Bradenton, and then yesterday into today. So we'll kind of have that figured out in the next day or two.
But it could be Sunday or Monday?
Could be Sunday or Monday.
So you're not changing the first three?
No, first three are the same, yeah.
Is it Bassett and Kikuchi?
Yeah, Jose Bassett and Kikuchi, yeah.
What are some of the debates on which days for Gosman? Is it related to performance elsewhere, or is it something about him physically that needs to be, that decides it?
Yeah, you want Kevin out there as much as you can, obviously, for one, and I think days of rest come into it too. You don't want to have too many, but I think having a couple extra is a good thing. And you know, just overall performance, really. You know, it's not like you're going to shy away from Kev versus anybody. But if we can line him up, you know, the best possible way for him, and then include, you know, a good matchup versus a division opponent, that's what we're looking for.
I mean, I feel you dodged one with him a little bit, and that, you know, really a start or two from away from him.
Yeah. Happy with the way it's gone for sure the last couple of weeks with him, and knowing that there was nothing really wrong, you know, the whole time was really comforting. And seeing him kind of progress the last 10 days has been really good. Yeah, you were holding our breath for a while.
What about your lineup? Have you decided on lineup, and what went into the decisions for the lineup?
Yeah, pretty set on the lineup. I think you're trying to just put guys in spots where they're not going to have to change who they are and what makes them great, and hopefully make it a little bit tougher for opposing teams or starters to match up against. So that's that being said, we like to keep it pretty consistent. I think what you saw at the end of camp is what you'll see. Probably George, Vlad, Bo in that order with JT behind him. And then kind of go from there. But it was nice to kind of roll out a lot of the regulars for, you know, the last week and a half or so.
Was that by design, that they played more consistently at the end of the spring?
Yeah, just with, you know, opening up here and then having 3 days off, you know, it's a little bit weird, or two, just whatever it is, Tuesday, Wednesday off. Yeah, you want to kind of build, it's a fine line between building them up and getting them ready, and then also not getting them, you know, in harm's way at the end of camp. So try to keep them together as much as possible, yeah.
So what, you know, we've talked about this a few different times, but what sort of tip the scales right now for Vlad, between Bowen, and George?
I mean, it's not like a magic equation, you know. I just think the way they're all swinging the bat and how they kind of play off one another and their skill sets and what they do with guys on base and things like that. If they're doing what they're supposed to do and what we've known of them for their whole career, you know, they're all hitting with guys on base. So it's really kind of when that spot comes around again with what the other part of the order has done. And then hopefully George is hitting with guys on and Vlad and Bowen on down the road. But I think it's just... at the very least, it kind of just, you know, splits up specific skill sets, really. But again, you know, it's not set in stone. You know, you want to be specific with it, but there's no real, okay, this is going to 100% work. You know, it's just, we like the way it rolls out.
George and Bo can be kind of free swingers. Do you like the idea of having Vlad in between them as a guy who can maybe take a few more pitches?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, if we're going to see the Vlad that we've seen in the past when he's really good and in spring training, yeah, for sure. And again, you don't want to tell guys, the last thing I want to tell Bo Bichette is don't swing. You know what I mean? I think, oh, I want to tell him to swing. I don't want there to be guys on base. So a lot of it is just trying to find, you know, your best players at the plate when they're really good. I think Bo is really good. One of the best in the league when guys are on base.
Schneider's the ninth. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, Bo, sorry. Being a Vlad in spring, just how do you, where do you feel he's at heading into the season?
Both of them, I mean, they look great, you know. Again, results aside, I think the pitches they're swinging at in spring training were great. I know they're really confident. They've had great off seasons and great camps, so you feel really good about those guys. You know, it's obviously a big part of our team, but love where they're both at.
Is the ninth inning by committee situation initially? Or?
Probably. I mean, I think to start, you can look at Yimmy and Chad to kind of be pushed back into a later inning or two. And then, you know, Cabrera, Mesa kind of after that. But depending on lineups, you know, things like that, it's we got options still. Obviously, two guys that you're used to having back there, not there to start, but it's an opportunity for other guys to really step up, and love the way they're both throwing the ball. And I think the biggest thing is it's going to be opportunities for guys that may not have been in those spots out of the chute, getting those right away.
What did Nate Pearson show you this spring?
Stuff was there, which was a big thing for him, not kind of hit or miss with his stuff. Velo was there, slider was there, and executed at a better level. You know, I know last year we talked about two out of the first three pitches for strikes, and for the most part, we saw a lot of that this year. Biggest difference with Nate is just his mentality, you know, understanding that he needs to take another step forward. Adding the split, I think, will help him against left-handed hitters. And, you know, just I love where his mentality is right now, to where, okay, it's time for me to really go and use my ability and stay up here.
Does Chad's last appearance against Philadelphia give him a lot of confidence about where he's at right now?
Yeah, that part of camp, that part of that order, that was pretty impressive. Again, I've been saying that, you know, quietly, a full year of Chad Green is, it kind of goes under the radar. He's been really, really, really good for his whole career in a really big spot. So that was really cool to see, and it was pretty good timing. It was, you know, we got some good outings that day between that and Kev the next day. So it was good to see that.
He was also really strong at the end of last season.
Yeah. I think our bullpen was so good last year. It was kind of, you know, kind of the, he got flown under the radar a little bit. But yeah, he was good every single time. There was the one, I think it was Colorado, where a bunch of runs scored in his first outing and we were winning pretty handily. But other than that, he was pretty much his normal self.
Davis will be the first one to tell you he didn't have a great spring. So how much of what he did last season really factored into the decision, because you knew what he could do for this club?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at the whole body of work with a lot of guys. Some guys it's performance-driven in camp, but with Schneid, you know, he knows what he can do. I think our team knows what he can do, and the league knows what he can do. So it really comes down to you know, remembering that and then seeing how he fits with the rest of our roster, which is a pretty damn good fit.
All right. Well, we suggested there would be news. There is indeed news. That is John Schneider, was John Schneider, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, speaking at Tropicana Field. Ross Atkins will address the media. Pardon me. Ross Atkins will address the media at 3:30. And we will carry that live as well. We'll get to our picks in a minute. Kevin, just touching on what John Schneider just told the media, Wes Parsons, Nate Pearson, they get the final two spots in the bullpen. Clearly some concern, some unknown with Kevin Gausman. John Schneider not ready to commit to Kevin Gausman starting in Houston. We had suggested perhaps you start him in the Bronx against a division
opponent.
Well,
I think it's they don't really know about game four. That's what it is. If he doesn't pitch game four, when will he pitch?
Right.
And he mentioned about the division opponent.
Yeah.
Right. So you might, if he doesn't pitch game four, you might skip Houston to come to the Yankees, because they were 21-31 last year in the division. They can't make, for me this year, they can't make the playoffs if that doesn't get better.
And quite frankly, Kevin Gausman and Minute Maid Park,
They don't like each other.
They don't like each other.
No.
So that was interesting, at least. So nothing definite in Kevin Gausman. Certainly no reason to be concerned right now. I think it's just simply a matter of how it falls into place. So therefore, Wes Parsons, because I know we were looking at this. Okay, Wes Parsons, Mitch White, aren't they kind of the same thing? But clearly the Jays are worried about innings. So there you are. I don't know if this surprises me. I guess not. It looks very much as if the top four is going to be Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Justin Turner. Towards the end of spring training, we saw Bo in the number three spot. And Bo has said, I just want consistency. Bo likes a consistent spot. I'm okay with it. It just, I'm a little surprised it wasn't something we saw right from the get-go in spring training. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it doesn't matter. But, Kevin, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's how Springer looked in spring training. I think it's how Vladdy looked in spring training. I think how they know Bo will be in the regular season. And then I think they know that Turner can drive dudes in. That's, you're trying to maximize everybody's talent. You're trying to get the best out of those four dudes you can possibly get to maximize how many wins you have at the end of the season. I love it. And they're not married to it. I love that too. They might be married to the one spot and the four spot, unless you got, again, against some really good pitching and you want to move Bo to the cleanup spot and you want to move Turner around. Like, you can do some things. I think who's leading off, if he's healthy and Springer looks like he can pull a fastball, he'll be leading off most of the time. I know for a fact that Vladdy loves hitting in the two hole. He just feels comfortable there. Like, it's, and it's that, again, breaking up the free swingers.
Right.
There's a lot of the times there is two pitch, two outs a lot. What does Vladdy do? And I'm not sure mentally Vladdy's capable of doing that. I mean, no offense to Vladdy. I just don't think he is. It's just working the counts, and how do you have a quality at bat without getting a hit with two outs already on two pitches? You want to break that up a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. And again, it gets back to who would you rather have up a lot of the times with dudes on base?
Right
and
now,
I
Bo.
Think that, again, a lot of the smart people are telling them, put Bo in that spot, and he'll come up a lot of the times that way, right? It's sort of the three-hole, the six-hole, and sometimes the cleanup spot, right? Depending on who's where and how many times the guy's getting on base. You got to love it.
And with the injuries to Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano, not really any clarification on that yet. I really expect that. I would think we'll probably learn tomorrow that they're both in the IL. John Schneider pretty clear. Jimmy Garcia, who we talked about this yesterday, he had second highest velo in camp this year. Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green will handle the back end of the bullpen.
That's experience.
Sure. Yeah. My guess is Chad Green gets the first shot at it in Tampa.
Matchup
driven.
You're crazy.
You're right.
If two lefties are coming up, you may want to be careful how you use the slider and those kind of things. So I'm sure it'd be matchup driven.
All right. Well, it's that time where we drag Kevin Barker off the fence, where he's spent the last 2 days.
Who's the most irreplaceable player in the team?
I don't know. The entire rotation
and the back end of the bullpen and the top four, they're all irreplaceable. We're going to force Kevin Barker off the fence.
Huh.
And we're going to do our picks for the year. Are you ready, Barker?
Are you ready? This is almost like spring training. It's the worst time of the year.
It's not. One,
it really is.
One, nobody remembers. Two, It's like sports talk. This is sports talk radio stuff.
I take pride in getting it right, though, and most of the time I don't. That irritates
me. Have fun with it.
You know, you're. I'm in on that information thing, and I don't really have a lot of this. I'm just.
All right. Are we going to? Should we start with Kevin's, or are we going to start with mine?
Age before beauty.
Age before beauty. Beauty before age. Our picks for the American League. We need a drum roll here.
I don't really have one.
You don't have a drum roll?
Not really.
You don't have a drum roll?
Not really.
Okay. We will do our American League picks then, Mr. Barker. You start with yours.
You want me to do all three of them, or you want me to start with the American League East?
I'd do the American League East.
Well, I think it's obvious, right? If you don't pick the Orioles, I think you might be begging. So
here we go. We got
American League East is my pick there. You know, and in there sort of everybody else, and everybody else will sort of fill in the blanks. So I got the Orioles winning the American League East.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You got in the Central.
Well, I think you can see it there on the bottom. Well, yeah, obviously people listening can't see the TV, but I have the Twins. Like, again, the Central is, you know, one of the worst divisions in baseball. Like, it really is. So if you can get some, you know, some playing time from certain guys with the Twins, you would think because of the way the Twins pitch and just some pedigree there with winning. So I'm picking the Twins. The Astros for me is an easy pick. I like the Astros just because they're, you know, it's hard to repeat. It's hard to be good back-to-back years. You know, that's why the Mariners, a lot of the times, because of their GM, you can't really take them serious all the time. I like the rotation. And again, the Rangers, it's hard to do that. So I like the Rangers in the playoffs. I just don't like them winning the division. So I got the Astros.
So you got the Yankees, Texas, and Toronto as your wild card.
I do. Absolutely. I got it in that order, too. I got the Yankees, the Rangers, and the Jays.
Oh.
So, yeah, absolutely. Okay. And it's, you know, again, you could pick – probably five different teams, right? You can pick the Yankees, the Jays, the Rays, the Rangers, and the Mariners. You could throw those five teams against the wall and make an argument for three of the five in any way you want to pick the three. Just so happens I picked those three because I was going to pick the Yankees to win the American League East but until Gerrit Cole got hurt.
All right. Well, that's all
right. So I picked those three teams.
All right. Let's see the correct picks. Let's see my picks. We're having fun with this.
We are?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my picks were already up in sports. There they are. Not much of a difference. I got Baltimore winning. I had Baltimore winning the division at the end of last season. So Baltimore, Minnesota, I'm with you on the Central. I have Texas. I think Texas has the best lineup in baseball. I've got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping they can keep it together until they get DeGrom and Scherzer back. And my wild card, you know, Yankees, Houston, and Toronto. I'm not certain that there isn't going to be a bit of a drop-off between Toronto, Tampa Bay, and Boston. You know me, I like the Rays. I'm Mr. Rays up. I don't know. I just got a feeling this may be the year that the Rays are just not capable of
I think you got to throw them in the mix. I mean, they tend to figure things out, right?
They do.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to get to the important stuff here for Kevin Barker, your picks as to the playoff, the World Series winners.
Oh, you want me to do World Series? You want me to do the National League first?
Oh, you can do the National League first.
Well, you want me to do the National League. Obviously, the National League West, that's an easy one. I mean, the Dodgers, they spent $1 billion. They just spent 10 years, $140 million for a catcher. I mean, it's like, you know, they're crapping money in L.A. So the Dodgers is the easiest one. The Braves, I mentioned a step back. You know, you could see Olson not having the year he had last year. Maybe they don't score as many runs. Maybe it opens the door a little bit for the Phillies to win that division. But I still have the Braves. Their pitching's really good. Alex seems like he'll do whatever it takes, and they're in their window, right? They're athletic everywhere. That's a big deal. The NL Central's sort of like the AL Central, right? You can flip it around for certain teams. I mean, you can make an argument, I guess, for the Brewers. I won't. Because I don't think their pitching's as good. I don't think they're going to score as many runs. The Cardinals got a good lineup. You don't know a ton about their rotation. So I'm picking the Cubs. I got the Phillies, the Diamondbacks, and the Padres in the wild card.
All right.
So that's my teams to make the playoffs.
Let's get to the postseason picks because we're going to get – we got to get out of here and get to Ross.
Okay.
At 3:30. Who do you have in the World Series?
Yeah, it's an easy one for me. It's the Phillies and the Astros. I got the Phillies winning the World Series. I think the Phillies have top three best rotation in baseball. I think they have the best bullpen in baseball. And I think they got mojo when it comes to bowing your chest out in playoff time. Like, the moment's not too big for them. And they got a little something to prove after getting beat by the Diamondbacks last year. So I'm picking the Phillies over the Astros. And I think it's going to be a really good World Series. And it's about time the Phillies do something. So I'm picking the Phillies.
I got the Astros going to the World Series, but I got the Atlanta Braves winning it. Because I think I picked them last year and they didn't win. I got the Atlanta Braves. I think Atlanta's.
Top, I don't know how you pick Atlanta. Top to bottom, if they the best can't beat team the Phillies.
In baseball. Top to bottom, I think they're the best team in baseball.
Well, they are during the regular season. Just seems like whenever they meet the Phillies, they're not anymore.
I think they're going to be better than the Dodgers.
They're the best team in the National League, for sure.
I think they're going to be better than the Dodgers. All right, let's quickly go to the individual awards. Kevin, your individual award winners are?
Yeah, well, again, I think we'll go MVPs first. In the American League, I got Julio Rodriguez. I mean, he's an athletic freak. That's a big deal, right? 30-30 is not the ceiling. Like, there's a lot left in the tank, and I think he's got a little bit more to prove. The National League, I got Fernando Tatis Jr. because I got the Padres making the playoffs. And for them to make the playoffs, he's going to have to do something huge. And I think 35 and 50, that's 35 homers and 50 stolen bases. And he might be the best defensive right fielder in baseball. So I got Fernando Tatis Jr. winning the National League MVP.
You got the Cy Young?
I do have the Cy Young. Zach Wheeler I have because obviously he's going to have to do a lot in the National League. He's really, really good. And Corbin Burns in the American League just because, you know, to be that number one, to sort of be the bully on the block in the American League, the Orioles have to have a true number one. Corbin Burns gives you length and quantity. Don't come around every day. For me, it's Corbin Burns in the American League.
And we have your NL winner as well. You said Zach Wheeler. You obviously,
yeah, Zach
obviously
Wheeler.
Read I mean, my picks. Yeah. And rookie of the year?
Rookie of the year in the National League, I got Lankford because of what you mentioned, Wyatt Lankford in the American League with the Rangers. They're going to score tons of runs. It's just about can they repeat when it comes to rotation. And, you know, they do have one of the worst bullpens in baseball, but I have Lankford. Yamamoto I have in the National League. I mean, he's surrounded by everything he can possibly be surrounded by, who he's playing for. So if you can't win it, I mean, there ain't no hope for you. So I'm picking that guy.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, let's roll to mine, to my individual picks, which, again, were up on sportsnet.ca. My MVP in the American League was Adley Rutschman of the Baltimore Orioles.
Hey, I go. Good
Trevor,
for you.
Trevor May said, Buster Posey. He's the next Buster Posey offensively.
Well, can he hit 40 homers? You got to ask. You win MVP, got to drop 40. Can he hit 40 homers? That's the big thing.
I think he's the type of guy that I think a lot of people, there's something about catchers. Catchers having good offensive years, I think a lot of people gravitate to him. I've got him for the AL MVP. My American League Cy Young Award, and I'm sticking with it, even though we don't know his health status. I think Kevin Gausman wins a Cy Young this year. I think Kevin Gausman wins a Cy Young. I'm not alone. You get a lot of folks in baseball feel that way as well. I just think he's poised to have a
somebody's
really got
to be special to your point for the Blue Jays to make the playoffs. Why not be Kevin Gausman?
And of course, as you said yesterday, you agreed with me. He's the most irreplaceable person on the team.
Not true. Yeah. There's like it 10 of them.
Let's go to Rookie of the Year, the American League, for Evan Carter at Texas. I wanted to go with Lankford, but Evan Carter was good in the postseason last year. How do you overlook him?
Yeah, I think Lankford can hit more homers. That's the thing, right? He can drive in more runs. He's hitting the middle. Evan Carter's a good pick, too. I mean, he's athletic. He's going to steal tons of bases. He's going to be on base all the time, right? When you're on base all the time, it's okay for you to screw up on the bases. So you're going to take some more chances. Take more chances. You steal more bases. Maybe you get more votes. So it's easy pick.
Texas is – I think we're on board with – I think Texas is the one team, though – I think Texas can win another World Series.
If
they get those two guys,
John Gray
back
might be a big deal.
John Gray's going to be a huge deal.
DeGrom's going to be a big deal. Yes. Like, hey, what are you going to get from him? Like, you know, Scherzer. What's he got? Like, there's some unknowns there, and their bullpen stinks. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I have a fair amount of faith that Chris Young will get stuff done. We heard from John Schneider, made a little bit of news, or firmed up some things that are a little newsworthy. Ross Atkins is the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He is set to address the media in Tropicana Field. Again, the Jays and the Rays will open the season tomorrow at 4:10. We're going to take a break, come back, hear from the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Back with the final half hour of Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Sportsnet, a reminder, you can get us via podcast about an hour or so after the conclusion of the show. Tomorrow we'll be on again from 2 to 4, obviously. That's a regular time slot now. 2 to 4 leading up to the Blue Jays game against the Tampa Bay Rays. The first game of the 2024 championship season.
Nice. 6-4 start. That's all you're looking for.
Yeah, because you don't want to come back 5-5. Ooh. I can hear the boos at the Rogers Center if the 5-5 Blue Jays come back.
What if they're 4-6?
10 games. Ten games. Like, yeah, okay. We got to move beyond that.
Okay.
It's short-term thinking. Take a longer-term view of it, Kevin. Take a step back and take a longer-term view of it. Mm. Speaking of a longer-term view, here is the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very lengthy process led by Ryan Mittelman and Andrew Tinnish. Hidi Sato as well has been really, really involved and very helpful in understanding everything we could about the player. The person was not as easy to learn as much about for some obvious reasons, but they did an incredible job of getting to know the teammate, the toughness, the resilience, and you know, the biggest challenge for us was projecting the starter in him, and his confidence and faith in that was a big part of the equation. His desire to do so and our willingness to explore that was a big part of the acquisition. So I think he also identified with the organization and city, was really excited about the culture of the team and the city and country. So he's been awesome. I think then moving forward to spring training, not exactly sure this was a part of your question, but a big thing for us is giving him every chance to be a starter, moving forward short-term and long-term, while considering him as a relief option for us currently and in the short term.
But the fact he didn't pitch much at all last year is a kind of a fine line. He'd love to do this, and we'd love to do this, but we don't know if it's the best idea right away.
Yeah, I think it'll look a lot like Bowden did last year.
Right.
So, the innings will be controlled early so that we're not spending a lot of bullets in AAA, ideally, and hopefully he's a weapon for us here and a person, not just a weapon, that can contribute to the Blue Jays as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Ross, at this point, what do you know about what Romano and Swanson are dealing with and how long they might take to return?
Yeah, I was with them both this morning. They both look great. They're recovering well. They feel strong. Barring no setbacks, I think this could be a minimal stint. A little bit different with Swanee because he didn't have as much of a workload built into spring training as Jordan did, but we're hopeful that it could be a very short stint, and we could see them certainly within the month. But that's barring no setbacks.
And the bullpen, you're leaning on that depth a little bit now. Rotation with Bowden. What do you feel about the next wave beyond that, and how you're set up if any more is needed?
Yeah, it's interesting. Across the game, there's been a lot of pitching injuries, and we've been called a lot on our pitching depth that is even in AAA. So, having guys like Hagen Danner and Zach Pop, in AAA for us. Obviously, the Yariel and some of the starting pitchers and Ricky Tiedemann, Chad Dallas. I'm forgetting someone right now, but it is a strong group that we feel good about can contribute in a significant way for us. So, spring training is performance is not something you try to. I mean, it all matters. Like, all information matters, and results matter, but some of the peripherals and some of the things that we're seeing behind the scenes, not just in pure performance, were very encouraging and exciting about all of those guys.
Ross, what are those two guys, Romano and Swanson, doing right now, and what is sort of their timeline to, are they long tossing, how do they progress to a mound, and that sort of rough timeline?
Yeah, I mean, it could be pretty quick for Jordan, as long as he doesn't have setbacks. It could be that he's getting on a mound relatively soon, and Swanee not too far behind, so they are both long tossing, and we'll be careful, but they had done so much work that it could be a relatively smooth transition back into the major leagues. They will likely need a couple of outings when facing hitters for sure. We'll see if they need to pitch in Buffalo. It will really depend on how long that progression is. But for now, they're long tossing, and as long as they continue to recover well, the next step will be getting onto a mound.
What does the process look like for Joey Votto right now? Where is he at, and how far away is he from baseball activities and potentially some action?
I think he's days from baseball activities. He still feels a little bit of tightness in his ankle, but then he'll want to get into essentially having a full spring training and getting that workload built up on his legs and on his swing so that he can recover and bounce back and be ready on a daily basis.
What would his progression look like for us? Like, would he, once he's ready down in Florida, would he jump right to Buffalo, or would he kind of go up each level all the way?
I would imagine, we'll work with him on that. That was the discussion that we had. He's obviously extremely open-minded. I'm sure you've all picked up on that from his interactions. And he wants to make sure, most importantly, that he's at an elite level and not just at a level where he's participating or contributing. So I think he'll be, and we will be, very mindful of giving him every chance to do that. So the most likely scenario would be sometime essentially building up a spring training and extended, and then moving to Buffalo at some point. And he doesn't have a firm timeline on that. And, we'll connect on a weekly basis, and obviously we'll connect on a daily basis as an organization, but he and Schneids and I will connect weekly to see how we can support him and help him.
What do you expect Alec Manoah's progression and rough timeline to be?
And really, he's just a little bit behind. I think you could just look at the workload today. He threw two innings and he was exceptional. His stuff was electric. He's moving really well. His mindset's incredible. Then the next step would be to go three innings and then four, and then you're starting to talk about him being available. So I know, similar to what I was just saying, he's going to want to exhaust that time and make sure he gets the most out of it to make himself a candidate for us.
Ross, from what you've seen of the offense this spring, what's your level of confidence in its ability to produce runs in a better way this season?
Yeah, it's been really encouraging. The early results have been great. The dialogue, the preparation has been consistently in a really strong place, and the individualized dialogue, the individualized discussion that Donnie and Guillermo and Matt and Hunter are having with all of our hitters is seemingly been very effective and received really well, and then the early results have been very good. So we obviously believe in this group and are really excited to see what it means in terms of run scoring this year.
What are your expectations for this team this year?
To compete and ultimately to contend for a World Series.
Ross, with Vladdy, is there anything specific that you can point to that gives you the most optimism, or something you see that's different this year or improved?
I think the biggest thing with Vladdy is his track record and his history of having such a knack to have elite contact and hit the ball very hard. So we've continued to see that his whole career and are really encouraged by his at-bats in spring training. Everything about his peripherals were really exciting. So I think the most encouraging thing is the things that he's feeling and saying and articulating.
And then just on Ricky Tiedemann quickly as well, how do you balance like last few stages of development and contributing here? Like, what's that timeline look like?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's, it's still early in his career. I mean, he clearly can handle a lot, and it's exciting to think about him contributing at this level, and I'm certain he will. There's still an opportunity for him to, with his skill set, to dominate and to dominate AAA hitters. And we don't need to see that for him to be someone that's coming here, but I think getting to a level where, his fastball command and then the slider usage and changeup usage are levels that, he can do different things to different lineups, because he has so much potential that it's really important for us to, help him maximize that time down there.
Ross, how did the guardrails on his workload this season impact how you may want to use him here? Like, if he came here, would you consider him for different roles, or does he need to be in every fifth day so he can kind of continue his progression as a starter? How do you look at the kind of the plan for him and his relative to his usage and potential contributions here?
Yeah, I mean, as a starter. So we're just viewing him as a starter. That we would never eliminate anything, that if we had the need and there was a certain point in the season where it didn't negatively impact long-term him being a starter, certainly could consider that, but he'll be on a regular starting turn, and we're not concerned about the workload this year.
So even though he's kind of been, like, he could go wire to wire and not have to be protected very much?
You know, I mean, you always you want to be mindful of how big increases are, but as we've talked about a lot over our time here, every individual is different. Every time of the season, every aspect of their development and their path is different. So we just want to use all the information, not just the guardrails that, you know, we will have. We will have some thresholds that are more important than others. But I think it's, in our opinion, just putting a firm end based on innings is there's a better way to handle that. What the stress was on the innings, what the number of pitches were, how he's recovering each outing, what the trend is with all of his stuff. So we'll use all that information to make sure he's in a safe place.
Carlos, you mentioned your expectation for the team is to compete. How is it better equipped to do so than last year?
Yeah, I mean, all the things we've talked about this offseason several times at the start, during the middle of the offseason, a month ago, it's the continued growth of the group here, our belief in the group here, things that we've added to this team, really excited about the additions of Justin Turner and bringing KK back, IKF, having a full season of Chad Green, really excited about the progress of Alek Manoah, getting bringing Yemi Garcia back on a club option. So a lot has transpired to keep this group together, continue to complement it, that we feel very, very strong about.
There you go, Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. So, obviously Romano and, as Shai Davidi tweeted out, Romano and Eric Swanson will go to the IL. Kevin Gossman, we're kind of waiting on. Alek Manoah through today. The next step, according to Ross Atkins, get him to pitch 3 innings, 4 innings. I don't know. The Joey Votto stuff I found puzzling.
Yeah.
Ross Atkins saying that Joey Votto needs a full spring training and then they will go from there. Does that mean that he needs 3 weeks or a month?
Let's hope not.
I don't know. But the one thing Ross said, and I went back and looked, is something that Joey Votto said. Joey Votto did say when he came here, he said, I'm coming here to be elite. I'm not coming here to be, I don't think Joey Votto plans on being a guy who's going to hit 205 with 3 home runs. And I think Joey Votto wants to get himself in a position where he can come up and contribute. I get that. And Romano and Swanson, puzzling there.
The Swanson thing's not. I mean, he didn't have a spring training, really.
But my point is, a couple of days ago, we were told that he was actually closer to being able to ramp up than Jordan Romano. I mean, I just guess we'll have to wait and see with those guys.
I mean, that's probably the obvious answer that you're supposed to give when you're a GM is there's some unknowns there. You don't want to back yourself into a corner and say something that's not going to take place, right? You don't want to get fans' hopes up. And it's just better to say how did he put it? The month, within the month?
Within a month, I thought he
said. Yeah, that's a long time. I mean, if they're gone for the entire month of April, that's going to be hard to make up for. Like, there's only so many Wes Parsons and Mitch Whites and all the
apparently
plethora not.
Apparently
of
there's
other...
a ton of Wes Parsons and Mitch Whites out there because...
Well, I mean, I know one's stealing a curveball grip off the other one, and maybe they're going to be better, and it's going to work out. They're going to give everybody 3 innings. And, look, this just brings it full circle right back around to the offense. It really does. Like, when you're – basically the reason why they made the playoffs last year was because of their pitching.
And defense.
Now it's, well, it goes hand in hand, right? You know, you strike out enough, you make enough good quality pitches, you get enough weak contact. That makes it easier for the Khakis to put you in the right spot. You're catching the balls a little easier. So now it's time for the offense to catch up and make some adjustments and sort of carry this team the first week of the season or first month of the season. So, yeah, I think he said exactly what most GMs would say. You know, I think we sort of already knew. I mean, that was the word when I was down there about Alek Manoah is, I will say this, we make fun and poke fun about, I'm in the best shape of my career.
He was in good shape.
Like, it was unbelievable. Like, yeah. He has done things in the offseason to make himself a better pitcher and hopefully he can come because they're a better team with him starting. So they can use other guys in positions to not have to, you know, force it, I guess, calling guys up from AAA that you really don't want to make a lot of outings. And hopefully they can do that and come and throw a lot of strikes and get a lot of people out.
Yeah, it does appear as if, kind of the takeaway from today's media availability, both with John Schneider and Ross Atkins is just me. I feel... More uncertainty now. What'd you say?
Get a lot of hits.
No, I said...
that's what I took away.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hits.
I feel more uncertainty about the bullpen now than I did going into the day. Yeah. Like, I just assumed one of those two guys would be back.
Well, that's why Wes Parsons is here. So do they. Like, it's about the innings. Where are the innings coming from? They don't feel... Again, they're the oldest rotation in the American League East. Like, the innings early on, they got to be real careful because they want the best out of those dudes at the end of the season or the middle of the season when they're really trying to get hot and heavy and make a run at it. So, yeah, it makes sense, I guess.
I wouldn't read too big a deal into the fact that we don't really know when Kevin Gausman is starting yet. I think that's just I've kind of thought all along. You said this a couple of weeks ago when he first was hurt. He said, probably start him in the Bronx. Just give him as much time as you want. He's facing a division opponent. He doesn't pitch well against the Astros.
I think it's interesting, too, to hear John say you don't want too much time off. Right? The heart rate's up.
Right.
The momentum of, you know, how you feel is raring and ready to go now.
Well, he hasn't had a regular spring, so you don't want to.
Well, I don't know if he even needs it. I mean, he's a veteran guy. Maybe this little hiccup will help him getting the best out of him longer. I mean, he's thrown a ton.
Yeah.
He's older, and he's got two pitches. Like, there's a lot goes into him trying to get people out, and maybe this little setback will help him just get the best out of him to give him a little bit more of a breather. And they're trying to get their best four guys against the division more times than not. I think you can look at it that way.
Yeah. I also think that the news on Joey Votto explains why Daniel Vogelbach is on this team as opposed to somebody like Nathan Lucas is they need a power bat off the bench.
Well, he's a
power
threat. Right?
Off the bench. He's a threat.
I think, too, if Joey hadn't gotten hurt, he's making the team. Like I think they liked his at-bats enough to think that he can give a Joey – Votto at bat with a dude standing at second. Like that's a big deal for them. It's mm-hmm. not so much a hit and a homer. You know, Vogelbach gives a threat of the long ball. Yeah. Is he going to give you a quality at bat? I mean, don't like the breaking ball. Like it's, and I'm not saying he's an easy out because he's a big time threat, got tons of power, but who would you rather have up in the big moment? Two outs in the eighth inning facing an elite right-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
That I think is what they're trying to push for. And I mean, this entire spring training remark, that's a long time. I mean, how many at bats do you need? You don't know yourself by now. I mean, I get that you're trying to see the best of Joey Votto, but man, like,
I think you're underestimating the extent of his injuries. Especially the injury last year. That doesn't surprise me.
Well, when I talked to him in spring training, he didn't seem like he was worried about any of that. It was about getting at bats and
he's Joey Votto. He's not going to come out and tell you, Kevin. I don't know if I got anything left in the tank.
I've known Joey for a long time. It's not about having anything in the tank. It's about being healthy. And when I was talking to him, he told me he was 100%. And then he hurts his ankle. And that's, you know, I mean, that's some bad luck. I got to be honest with you. I've never heard anybody stepping on a bat, and especially in the big leagues. Everybody keeps their bats. Like, that's how you make your money.
I don't know.
Whose bat's laying in the dugout?
I don't get. I mean, Michael Barrett almost ended his career running into going after a ball in the on-deck circle, and there was a donut there and a bat there.
Oh, I can see
that. That's a field of play.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I still – You're not going to make a big deal out of it, but I saw the same thing you did. I'm going, who the hell left their bat line in the freaking angle of the dugout that Shohei Bota's going to roll
nothing
over.
Nothing against Vogelbach, but it's I think they feel more comfortable, and John would feel more comfortable calling on Joey to have that big time at bat against a tough righty than Vogelbach. That's just the way it's sort of playing out, right? I think they like their bench for the most part, right? They got a power lefty, they got a power righty, they got a contact guy. They haven't had that in a while. I think it's that they've taken the best athletes to the season.
Yeah.
I think you can argue that right now.
No, I think if you, going back to John Schneider's interview with us, where he talked about, I asked him about spring training and putting your bench together, how much of it is taking the guys that are going the best, or how much of it is you've got to have guys who give you different things. And he talked about, you want a little speed, you want contact ability, which Ernie Clement gives him contact ability. You want some power off the bench, and you want guys who are able to play multiple positions, which, you know, they have with Ernie Clement and to a certain degree David Schneider.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Impactful plug and play.
Don't have to worry about. You don't have to ask him every day, how you doing?
Well, them three dudes better be good every time you ask him that. if not, they ain't going to be there. It's real simple.
You want to know that if Ernie Clement hasn't played for 2 days, that he's going to be ready to go.
One of those guys. Even if you don't feel right, you tell him, I ain't never felt better, coach. I'm gumming. Yeah. I ain't never felt better. It's the best I ever felt.
What do you think a guy like Ernie Clement is thinking today? It was made opening days. He's had a good spring.
He's earned it.
The organization. Yeah. You know what? I'm not surprised, because I thought at the end of last year, if you had said at the end of last year to me, okay, give me your 25-man roster for opening day in 2024. Obviously, there are going to be pickups and acquisitions and everything like that and deletions, but Ernie would have been in my roster at the end of the year. I would have said, yeah, I can see it. There's a real chance where this guy is on
my opening day roster. Yeah, I've liked him forever. Since the first time I've seen him, I liked him. He's got baseball IQ, which is a big deal. On a championship team, you got to be able to
easily maintain swing,
a flat swing. Like, there's not a lot of moving parts to it. He's got an idea how to get the barrel to the baseball after sitting over there for 3 days. That's a big thing, right? And especially with the velocity that you have now, you got to be short and quick to the ball. There's not a lot to maintain between the times you're playing. So it gives John a lot of options, and that's never a bad thing. I don't think John can go wrong now. Whoever he goes to over there, I don't think people can argue and yell about it. I think that's what you want on a good team.
Oh, let's cover up a couple of things that kind of escaped us today. First of all, the Baltimore Orioles have been sold. That was official, made official today, a unanimous vote, which those things usually are. So the Baltimore Orioles are owned by David Rubenstein. Mm. And the L.A. Dodgers, according to Jeff Passan, are close to a 10-year, $140 million deal with Will Smith. Well, I mean, I'm not allowed. Will Smith is pretty good.
He's a good player. Is he a $140 million player? That's a lot of money.
Well, that's $14 million a year. Is he a $14 million a year player?
$140 million. That's a lot. I mean, I know the years makes it sound like it's only $14 million a year,
Dodgers,
which it is.
But it's Dodgers money.
I know.
It's Dodgers money.
They got a room.
Yeah. Apparently he gets his own interpreter with it too. So there you go. So Will Smith.
I need an interpreter.
Yeah. Will Smith is close to signing. And the Rays made a little deal, a three-way deal. They get catcher Ben Rothert, and John Birdie is off to the New York Yankees.
Yep.
So that is, and I'm just scrolling through here. The Rays have made a couple other moves, much like the case with John Schneider. Kevin Cash is talking to his reporters and finalizing their roster. So, that's it. One more sleep tomorrow.
Nice. Can't
opening
wait.
Day.
I can't wait.
2 to 4 tomorrow. Don't forget, 4 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too. I can't wait.
We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.